Okay, tallest podcast on earth. I am so stoked to get to meet with Rhett Larson. What up, dude? I don't know, like I was just telling you before, like this is really cool for me because huge shocker. I saw the video, of you working with Germany or Netherlands and you were doing some dancing. And the part to me wasn't just like, oh, the dancing, what's up with the dancing?
Right.
Instantly, I was like, this guy thinks different. And I want to talk to him. So that's how I originally found you and was just like, man, this guy's probably got so much knowledge to share. And that's what I want to do. I want to pick your brain a little bit. So welcome, man.
Hey, thank you. God, damn it. I wish everybody felt that way after watching that video. I wish I got fewer comments about how shitty a dancer I am. That would have been an improvement and more.
Dang,
comments
who's commenting that? That's a bold comment.
Free thinker. I was. Yeah. No.
Yeah. I read between the lines.
You are in the minority.
So I'm curious. Tell me a little bit, first of all, just for people who don't know you, and I don't even really know you, which is why I'm so excited. Yeah. I think in general, I've reached out to people that I knew and it was, you know, and so this is cool for me because I don't really know you that well, but you're involved in the volleyball community and you're involved in strength and conditioning and probably so much more, which is right up my alley, things I love to talk about. So Rhett Larson, first of all, let me say this. Rhett, this is so random, but I just realized Rhett's a name that you can't fuck up. Rhett, like, has anyone ever missaid your name?
Oh, you're so effing wrong. You need to follow me into a Starbucks one day. You will see.
What do you get? Of Rhett.
I'm like the member of a Facebook group where I'm in that group of people that spell their name immediately after introducing themselves. Hey, I'm Rhett, R-E-T-T. Hey, I'm Rhett, R-E-T-T.
What's the other way? An H, R-H, the hidden H?
Oh, you would get Brett. You would get, and who cares about the H? Of course, you would get that. The H every time. Every time someone spells it, it's with the H because of Rhett Butler. But no, it's Brett, Brent a lot. Yeah, it's just not too common. So, wow. And I love it, but you have to spell it every time.
Dude, I thought I was right on point with thinking no one's messing up Rhett. But I didn't think about writing it down. I was thinking more like, you know, you've been to China, all these other countries, like, do they mispronounce right. your name? And I was like, it's spelled out for you. It's exactly how it should be said. Like, I'm Taylor, dude, and I get Tyler all the time. I don't really understand
what?
Why. I get Tyler all the time, dude. In fact, most ex-girlfriends I've ever had, their dad always called me Tyler. Even my current girlfriend, same thing. I don't know why. Anyways, yeah. Dude, tell me a little bit about yourself. Kind of how you got started, what you're up to.
Right. I think the reason you don't know much about me is I've been actively avoiding you for pretty much my entire career. I see you constantly. I know everything about you, but I'm
well,
just
you've been
always
killing
lurking
it.
In the shadows. Yeah. So I've been a strength coach for 20 something years, and my volleyball kind of my introduction to volleyball started when I lived in Southern California. So I lived in Huntington Beach for about 10 years and I just loved the AVP tour. So I started, cause I was playing a little bit of beach volleyball cause I
oh,
lived
nice.
In kind of one of the hometowns of great beach volleyball.
Absolutely.
And so I just started training a handful of pro people in the mornings before I went to my regular 9-to-5 job. And you know, at that point, I'd become a strength and conditioning coach and was working at a big box sports performance facility. But my volleyball players, I quickly saw my beach volleyball players really needed the stimulus of training in the sand. That my transfer of training for beach volleyball, I felt like was better if we were doing a lot of our weights and plyometrics and speed stuff actually in sand. So I would just load up my car and I spent, gosh, like 8 years or so training as many beach volleyball players as I could, just giving me some beer money three times a week and having a blast. Cause you know, in the sand, it just, I'm somebody that thrives on the creativity. I think I'm similar to you in that, like, I'm always looking at the way a sport is played and then thinking of all the different ways I can constrain it or overspeed it and things like that. And the beach really allowed me unfettered, like, kind of access to my creativity where now I can throw kettlebells. I can, you know, whatever with impunity. And so anyway, that's how it kind of started. And then as I'm rocking and rolling on the beach, I get this opportunity to go over to China to
I really hate to interrupt you before we get there, because I have some interesting questions about that. I'm curious, why movement? Why strength and conditioning? Like, step back before, like, you're playing beach volleyball. Like, what brought you into wanting to pursue that? Before volleyball, all that.
Yeah. Oldest explanation in the book for strength coaches, which is that I just personally wanted to get faster. I mean, I've come from a long lineage of long distance runners. So, like, I have 26.2 miles in my blood, but sport never appealed to me. Yeah. So I've been much more attracted to basketball and then volleyball when I moved to California and before. But, and so I've always wanted to try to hack my slow muscles into being able to jump higher and run faster. And so I just personally got really into exercise physiology and plyometrics. And I would just go to Barnes and Noble and buy up that entire rack of sports performance books back in the day. And then my mom gave me a call one day and said, Rhett, you can actually go back and get a master's degree in this. And so I went to North Carolina, Chapel Hill for 2 years to get my master's in exercise physiology. And from there, I was just off to the races.
Okay.
I started working with basketball players first. And then I started writing articles for Volleyball Magazine when I lived in Atlanta, Georgia. And I became a fitness writer. I'd write 8 to 10 articles a year for Volleyball Magazine. And then I got this opportunity in Southern California, a sports performance training job opened up. And I was like, first plane out there, you know, take me to that.
Before that then?
I was going to school in North Carolina, living my off season or my summers in Atlanta.
Okay. Yeah, frozen. We're back. You guys, this might happen a couple times. This is actually why I'm so sorry to interrupt. This is why I haven't done it in like a couple weeks. My internet is just like up and down. It's so unreliable. So this is what you get when you're in the frozen tundra. So dude, I appreciate you being a little soft with me here.
When one huge country is bombing your neighboring country, you just never know what's going to happen.
Dude, and let's not get too political here, but it is terrible what's going on. It's really a tragedy. And I'm sorry, dude. Okay, so continue. You're in North Carolina. Yeah, yeah. You're off season. I love that you said off season. Like, you're just so in that mindset. There's no summer anymore.
Me too. It's when I'm not doing my thing. So yeah, it's during the summers when I'm not in school, I go down there to visit her, and I've never personal trained anybody except for myself. And she's like, well, I think I can get you a job as a personal trainer at my big Globo gym. And I roll in, and on day one, they give me this pregnant lady that I'm going to be working out. On day two, the Indiana Pacers roll in with 5 of their guys that live in Atlanta in the off season. And, you know, the head of personal trainers, her name was Tequila. I'll never forget that. Whoa. And she was like, okay, all the guys at the top, all the pictures on the top row, these are our guys that have all the NBA experience. They've trained all these guys in the NBA. Da, da, da. And they're like, and the Pacers guy said, which one of these guys has their NSCA CSCS, their Strength and Conditioning Association certified strength and conditioning specialist? And I was the only one of 25 personal trainers that had gotten that particular certification.
Wow.
And so she's like, just the guy that started yesterday. And they're like, that's our guy. So my second personal training clients are like 5 NBA players,
dude,
one of which
savage.
Goes on to be the NBA's most improved player that year, gets his first all, the guy named Jermaine O'Neal. And he just blows up that season not because of me at all. I'm a terrible coach at this point. I'm just following like the sheet that their coach gave them, just kind of moving weights for him and being like, oh, can you go heavier? Let's go. Okay, let's go heavier. But I got all of this awesome like boost to my fledgling career just because of Jermaine O'Neal for a little bit. I got to write all these magazine articles and stuff. So from there, I went to Southern California, trained volleyball players, got this great opportunity to go to China to work with a bunch of different Olympic teams for preparing for the 2012 London Games, and took that, thought I was only going to be there for a year. And 7 years later, I was the China guy.
How do you get picked for a job like going to play in China?
Yeah, it's a lot of just kind of who you know. Sure. I'd been in So I say I moved to Southern California, and then about 12 years later, I go to China. Well, in those 12 years, my little franchise had become the biggest in my network. Mm. My owner was a genius. Again, nothing to do with me. I'm a good coach.
Be easy on yourself here. We know you're killing it. We know something special about you, bud.
And so my facility does real well. And everybody seems to like what we do. So just kind of word gets out. And I made, in that many years in the business, you make so many friends. And a lot of people from my facility had gone on to other facilities that are speaking good things about me. And I'm also been in, crucially, I've also been in a leadership role for about 5 years. So I went from leading my little center to leading kind of a network. And so when people are looking for a good coach, first of all, and a good coach that has leadership ability and also is a single guy that is willing to go over to China and live there for a long time. So, you know, if you have a wife and kids, tough to just cut and move to China for a year.
Sure.
Like I kind of, that Venn diagram of the necessary things results in this.
A good looking man in his late 30s, early 40s.
I'm going to be 50 this year.
No way.
Yeah, that's the truth.
You're crushing it. You look like a young Ryan Seacrest.
Oh my God. I have such a good story about
About Ryan Seacrest, let's hear it, dude. I want to hear it.
All right. This is quick. I'm living in Southern California. I go to an AVP tournament in Huntington Beach. This is the only tournament that I think in the history of the AVP had a sponsorship by Playboy magazine. So they had a booth set up with a bunch of playmates. And as a special treat, they're all going to be at the players' party on Saturday night. And so because I'm training a bunch of Pro Beach guys that are, I'm often training them for peanuts or avocados or whatever it is. They always hook me up. I always get to go to all the players' parties. So long story short, I get a date with a playmate. I go on 3 dates with her while she and her friends are preparing for the amazing race. And I thought everything was going really well. I came into work one day and there are 7 issues of the same Us magazine laid to the exact same page of her walking hand in hand with Ryan Seacrest in Malibu. Seacrest's new girlfriend, blah, blah, blah. And I was
so did she so just think that you were Ryan Seacrest for like 3 dates or what?
So Seacrest, no, not me. I mean, Seacrest literally stole my I couldn't say girlfriend, but the girl that I was dating at the
time.
If I ever do meet Seacrest, we have a great point of interest.
When you do meet Seacrest, you're both going to be really confused.
I'll take it. He's not an ugly guy. I'll take it.
Derek. Yeah.
Thank you.
Did you work with a lot of AVP players then? You said for 10 years? No.
Yeah. Probably for the 10 years I lived in Huntington, probably 7 or 8 of those years I was with AVP players. It was almost like an open door, you know? So the two guys that I trained from beginning to end were Ryan Mariano and Ed Ratledge. But I had a stint there for about 4 years where Jake and Rosie trained with me. And that was when we got a bunch of folks in there. I'm sure you see Jake all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's great.
Great. Dude,
want to continue down the path of your career leading up to this point. I have so many questions. The first one to me is like, what's the big difference between, there's definitely a big difference between training women's volleyball indoor and men's volleyball on the beach. And like, how do you alter what you're going to program when it comes to the beach? It was interesting to hear you say, like, you were just like one day, like, why don't we just bring all the stuff we do indoors and put it on the beach? Yeah. Like, where did you come up with that thought and that idea?
That becomes, a lot of it is about firing frequencies. Like plyometrics are just need to be very specific in order to get the best transfer. And even though I would see some, like when I had my volleyball players, my indoor players that would transition from beach, like played a bunch of beach in their off season, they would come in. I felt like their ankles were really strong and their quads able to get out of the sand really well, but there was a slowness in their firing patterns, like when just getting off the ground. And so we needed to do things on hard surfaces in order to get that speed of contraction up. So whereas, in fact, I would love in a perfect world that we're training on a variety of different surfaces. I think one thing we have in common is our love of, or what we see as a huge benefit in variability of training, that the different stimulus that comes, whereas you can do a ton of training in, you know, on the surface that you're used to, or that you compete on, there is a huge benefit from just having to throw a curveball at your system and make it self, like make it kind of self-organized to figure that new puzzle out of how to move on this different surface. And it, there's a ton of benefits from that. So,
Wait, really quick. So I'm curious, when do you decide today we're going to train on the grass? Today we're going to train on the beach. Today we're going to train on, like, I don't know, hot coals. Like, when do you decide when to mix it up?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't get to make that decision normally. If I'm playing
with
an indoor
team. Let's say you do. Of course not. When you're in a team and you're in the structure, of course you have to work within the bounds, right? Within the lines. But I'm curious, because in a perfect world where you could do whatever you want, like you said, what would you, how would you schedule that? And the part I have to separate here that I think is important is, let's assume first there's an off season, and then let's assume you're playing once a week on the beach.
Yeah. So absolutely in an off season, I would push different, you know, first of all, maybe different sports for those that
love
are like,
that.
You know, get on your surfboard, right?
Maybe that should be mandatory in general, dude. I totally agree with that.
Yeah. So especially a sport like surfing, where the risk of injury is pretty low. Get on some different stuff. You got to do that for your brain as well as anything. But also, you know, this is the time that you start more heavily getting into, go from sixes to playing doubles, right? So that's also really beneficial. Make your bigs
say
have
it.
To set
say
a bunch
it.
Of
no,
balls
you didn't want
to
say it.
In the sand.
Middle blockers, right. Dude. Make your middle blockers set balls, because middles notoriously are really bad setters. Let's be honest.
Really, really bad setters.
I agree.
I know you're not. You played opposite, right?
Yeah,
you
I were do a lot of things, but I agree with you.
Yeah.
I was a setter. I played opposite. Doesn't matter. My history is not important.
You know, it doesn't matter. This isn't about me. This isn't about me.
But yeah, I was a setter. A heavy contender as a setter.
I don't doubt it.
No, I'm just kidding.
And so I would wait it. I would be like 3 days a week in the sand, you know, right after the season, like don't even be in the gym, like maintaining some strength in the gym, sorry, but not in the, on a hard court, and then slowly getting that ratio down as you get closer to getting back in season. I mean, the sand is wonderful. It's so low impact, except for skin cancer. You pretty don't have that much of a worry of really having any too many bad things happen to you.
Speaking of skin cancer, quick side note. I've been in Poland for like the last 7 months, hadn't seen the sun in forever. We had our first 50 degree. I've never been so excited in my life for 50 degrees, where we had lunch outside. I also went to the solarium for the first time today. That's why I'm red. I'm like, what am I doing wearing a fucking sweater in the house right now? I'm like heating up. But let me tell you something really quickly. It's amazing what the sun can do for your mindset and attitude. And I know a lot of, especially American players, feel exactly what I'm saying here. The sun changes everything. And this is the first time, you know, I played in Italy and France, where it still was, the sun was out more often, but it still wasn't like really warm. This was totally different. We've had like 30, 40 degree weather and a lot of clouds for the past like 4 or 5 months. And a lot of guys deal with so much depression come January,
seasonal affective
February.
Disorder, right?
It is a real thing. And it's unbelievable. Like I sat in this little like panini maker, human panini maker, basically for like six minutes. I'm not trying to, you know, go different shades here. Low level, 6 minutes. And afterwards I felt so good. It changed my entire outlook. I walked out into the cold, but you have that kind of like internal, external heat going on in your body. And it's just like for 6 minutes, I close my eyes and I'm on the beach. I'm on the beach.
Yeah, right.
And it's just, I don't know. This is just a side note, because I was looking at myself in this camera. I'm like, I look so red right now. And it's true, because I got probably a little bit burnt. But I just like, I can't believe how much of a difference it makes. And so I'm curious, like, where do you find that? I mean, working in the Netherlands, maybe you're there in the summer though, so it's a little different.
Yeah. No. I'm there in the summer. It is a little different. The girls in the Netherlands, actually every team in the Netherlands, it's amazing. Like if there is even a little bit of sunshine out, everyone eats every meal outside.
Mm.
Like the outdoor eating area will be just packed and the indoor will have nobody in it. They love sunshine. Now, here's where it's interesting, is that training in China, that's a culture of not wanting to be in the sun. Like, I don't know how many times I've been in, you know, seeing an athlete on a physical therapist table where the physical therapist says, I think the reason she has chronic injuries is that she gets zero vitamin D. Make her go out in the sun in short sleeves for a 10-minute walk every day. I think we clear up a bunch of these problems. And sure enough, anecdotally, it seemed to work, but it's not easy to get a Chinese girl to go and put direct sunlight on her face and her arms. We had that problem.
So what were your solutions for them? Because obviously, like, you can supplement it. I've even seen these lamps that people have that I actually might get if I come back to Poland next year. Yeah. Because at least for me, it must be so much different when culturally you're trying to avoid the sun. Yeah. But for someone like me, who's just trying to get like absolutely destroyed by the sun, anytime I can see it, you know, like if there's a little crack in my window or like, you know, like the house in front of me, like we just started getting to where the house that's or apartment directly in front of me, the sun's now just high enough to where I can get a little sunset around like 4 or 5 o'clock. And I'm just like this against my window, you know,
like you just have 12 IKEA mirrors, just putting it into different rooms.
Dude, that's next level. Or I should get a bunch of like old CDs, used to burn CDs and just get them to reflect all over my house. Yeah. But I just think it's worth talking about. Cause I found that most, let's say American players for sure that I've played with, have a really hard time mentally come January, February, getting into March. Like, and I really believe personally that vitamin D plays such a huge role in it.
Huge.
Yeah. Anyways. Yeah,
and I don't, you know, I have no, I mean, we did it with supplementation. We did it with forcing them to go outside. Yeah. Like, this is where, you know, when that kind of thing happens, I say, hey, coaches, how do we feel about opening up to the idea of I get to do 3 warmups a week outside? Like, you know, that I'll set up something, you know, it's all logistics at that point.
Dude, so but, what's the, like diving a little more, I would really love to understand from you kind of like, what's your philosophy? Because you do think a little different. And I'm curious, first of all, I'd love to know what is your philosophy, but also I would love to know, how do you navigate that when like you have a coach who's more or less the boss of what goes on? And I can imagine in your experience, you're lucky if you get like a really good coach who's like, do what you want. Oh, you want to go take him surfing today? Like, go take him surfing. Whereas, you know, like, what is that dichotomy like?
Man, it is different. Every single culture, every single coach I've had, it's always different. I'm about to get a brand new coach this season that I'm going to have to navigate.
If you're allowed
this again, yeah, the German women's team just got Vital is coming in, and he was with the Polish team for the Polish national team as an assistant for the last few years. He's a Belgian guy, but he has different ideas about the way the athletes should warm up, and so it's all going to be this gentle exchange where I've learned from, especially with the Chinese teams, not just the volleyball team, but with all of the different teams we worked with, it's first to come in and make as little change as possible. Like, come in, understand what they're doing, and immediately try to find all the best things that they're doing. And then take those things that they are doing that I like and that I'm comfortable with and mesh them into my philosophy, into my, show them how I can make a little spin on this one thing that will be more engaging, maybe more volleyball specific that they haven't thought of. And so it's kind of a taking existing stuff and trying to retify it. And then once I build up that street cred, then push in and try to make it the full on, full Monty Rhett package.
Do you ever get athletes that hate you?
Yeah, not often, thankfully, but
I couldn't imagine not liking you as a strength and conditioning guy. I would love to work with you one day. We really got to meet in person. Love that. But the thing I think about is, I think about on our team right now where I'm in Poland, and I've actually been trying. Luckily, we got this new coach, this guy Javier, who's absolutely amazing, Argentinian guy. I love him so much. He's like re-inspired me in my last bit of time. Feel really lucky to be with him right now. So especially when it comes to Poland and most people in general, it's all about like grinding and just doing the basic warm up, the basic drills and I'm not talking about this coach now, but in general, in the past, it's been like, God, how many just like vanilla coaches, vanilla strength and conditioning coaches, and then players who just show up and put up with it. And so every year I'm like the guy to be like, how about we play a little baccaroni, or how about we do a little soccer warm up, or how about we do like just start trying to change things a little bit. So it was actually really cool to hear from you that taking things like step by step, because I'm at, as a player, I'm at the point now where I'm pissed off and I'm really frustrated. And when I see a guy like you, it gives me so much hope that maybe there's good people out there who are trying to change things and trying to show players and athletes that like, you can enjoy what you're doing and that playing soccer isn't detrimental. You're not going to like twist your ankle because you're playing soccer warm up or whatever. Like that these things, skill is like, there's so many parallels from so many different things, you know?
Yeah. Fortunately there's a growing body of research that supports how important this idea of play and variability and constraints laid programming or differential learning, like all of these buzzwords are now making it a little bit easier for head coaches to accept that this is not just me being bored with my job. And like, if the best way to get athletes to the medal stand was by rote repetition, then screw my ego. We're doing rote repetition. Like, I'm just going to like, that would be, but I'm lucky that it doesn't appear to be the best way to do things, that just practicing this one way of doing things over and over again isn't realistic for a team full of different athletes that are facing different situations all the time. That the best way to build a robust body, to build a body that can adapt quickly during a game to the myriad different crazy sets you have to hit, is one that is used to a ton of variability in their training. And so I think I got lucky that, and this is, I think, a huge part of my philosophy, which is training and fun don't have to be mutually exclusive. That actually, luckily for these athletes, the heaps of creativity and variety that I put into warm up aren't just to make them giggle. It actually is because I'm convinced that taking the same isometric lunge they've done that is super, super important for all the reasons that we know, for patellar tendon health or quad tone, whatever it is, and being able to layer in tons of challenges that make that an engaging couple of minutes is incredibly important for kind of neural engagement, things like that. Like as well as just having to make their neuromuscular system fire in kind of different ways. And I'm lucky that I think I got to be with the Chinese team and prove that it can be done in possibly the strictest, you know, kind of culture on the planet. That, you know, I've got hours of video because the Chinese, true to stereotype, love to videotape something that looks a little bit interesting. that being able to layer in fun and competition and dynamic kind of practices and silliness and discomfort, and not only muscular discomfort, but kind of getting out of your shell discomfort, can be beneficial. And if I could do it in China, then that made it a much easier sell for the Dutch team, where I got to have Jamie Morrison, who was bought in 100% to this kind of training, and then go to other teams that maybe weren't, but kind of already proven it at different levels. And it makes it easier for me with each subsequent team.
I mean, dude, it's so hard not to, you're saying so many great things. It was so hard. Like, my brain was going in 1,000 different directions. So apologize if I interrupt you. I'm trying my best to be an active listener.
You're doing great.
Personal life. Thank you. but you know, so the first thing I thought about was when you were talking about, like, let's say like a long hold isometric contraction, maybe not even long hold, just an isometric contraction. Yeah. What's like the first place you go to mix it up?
I'm just thinking about all the different isometrics that we do and how I would mix each up. I don't know if there's one, it's going to be a little bit dependent, situation dependent, but like, sure, if we were just talking about holding a split squat, like an isometric lunge, then for me, it's going to be about, all right. And let me say two things. The way that I would handle a split squat in the weight room, where maybe the main thing, maybe that I'm just trying to make it heavier and heavier, I'd like us to get to a point where everybody could hold 135 on their back in a barbell for 30 seconds. Maybe that's my end of season goal, right? And so it primarily be strength based. But I think that that is a little bit too binary, that I push a lot of isometric holds into my warm-up progressions because I am lucky enough that I get to handle my, I know like on Team USA, the women's team, it's mostly the athletic trainers that handle warm-ups, or it's mostly done kind of on their own. I get to control all warm-ups because I see that as like a secondary place to put a ton of my strength and conditioning, especially strength and conditioning that I see is kind of boring and could be boring if it didn't have some special sauce in it that I would need to be heavily coaching. So it doesn't work great in the weight room because I can't be everywhere in the weight room. So I have like a bucket of exercises, tons of the shoulder stabilization exercises, tons of stuff where that moves all to movement prep before training. And so isometric split squats would move into that bucket too, where I'm going to mix that with, okay, one day let's get girls in partnerships and tie bands around their knees so that they can do like abduction perturbations the whole time. Mm. Right. And maybe after 25 seconds, they have to close their eyes. And maybe in the last 10 seconds, you have to touch your nose like you just got pulled over for a DUI, still doing the perturbations the whole time. I'm going to keep pushing them till they fail. In the weight room, that's a place where I kind of take a stepwise progressions that are safe because we're dealing with weight. In the weight room, progressions. Let's just go straight to the hardest version. Let's see who topples over. Mm. Like, let's play. Like, I'm just going to just try to throw things at them until they're struggling, till they're at that messy outer edge of athleticism. Mm. And so maybe that's the first time we do it. Maybe the second time we do it, we have the same partnerships, but the girls are chest passing a medicine ball back and forth, and I have a timer, and we're seeing which team can get the most passes. Maybe the next time we do it, we go down in the split squats, and instead of it being that, you have a heavier medicine ball and we're throwing it, seeing who can knock the other person over. It's a battle for those 30 seconds. I mean, maybe the next time we're doing it, it's just eyes closed and I'm trying to make them work their arms in as many planes to see who's going to fall over. Maybe I put on a fun song and we see who can dance the best with their upper body. Like we're just going crazy here until everybody's smiling, but I could give a shit. I'm still just perturbing the system. Their body's self-organizing. The only difference is they're smiling and giggling.
So here's my question is, let's take just the warm-up. Just like, yep. Let's call it like, you could use a before weight training or before practice warm-up. The thing I think about is, because it's awesome to hear you say that it in some way reconfirms like how the new attitude I've had towards warm-up, which has been instead of just traditional, like lay on the floor and kick your leg up and then touch your toes and then reach for the sky, right. Like that kind of stuff. Right. I've been trying to make it more like movements that challenge me, some crawling, some handstands, some different things. And then as it gets a little heavier, maybe doing some things that become much more sport specific in terms of plyometrics and different things like that. So my question to you is, I love your idea of the warm-up and the ways to mix it up. And the first thing I think about when you said like, oh, let's grab a rope and let's say it's a tug of war or something, right?
Yeah,
let's
tug of war.
Whatever. The first thing I think about is like, damn, I know four guys on my team who instantly would be like, nah. Like, no, how do you handle? And this has been the question that I ask tons of different strength and conditioning guys that I've worked with through my years of playing professionally. Like, how do you handle guys like me who like want games, who want novelty, who want to learn and play? And then guys who are so, and I don't want to call it brainwashed because I don't, not that there's any dogma involved here, but like who just seem to be so stuck on the traditional, like they go to practice, they do like maybe 5 minutes of like some like really basic blue band rotator cuff thing. They roll out and then it's the warm up is like, you know, 5 minutes of ground or jog around the court for 3 to 5 minutes and then lay on the ground and do some kicks and then some classic DROMs, touch your toes, some lunges, and then start now doing some skips. And then the big show is at the very end, you know, the coach will be like, okay, everyone on the line, go. And then when I clap again, go touch the line and come back. Like, it's just like, fucking get out of here. Like, I'm so bored with it now. But the thing that truly blows my mind is that some guys just aren't bored. No, they are bored with it, but it's just like, well, This is just what we got to do. And in fact, I've had coaches who, the strength and conditioning guys who run the warm-up, and I've had this conversation with them and they're just like, dude, it's just necessary for preventing injury, to help prevent injury. You got to warm up. And this is just the cadence. You got to get the blood going, the muscles warm, and you got to, you know, go through these basic range of motion movements. And where I agree to some of that, I also am just like, dude, don't you see, like, you're not blind when you're running. And I'm curious from you, like, when you're running this, like, you know, instantly who's engaged and who's not. It's not hard to tell. Yeah. And what's benefiting them, what's not. And I feel like strength and conditioning guys and coaches are not taking enough responsibility to see those things that all of us players are talking about, whether it's they're just laughing or clearly not doing something, and take some ownership to be like, or maybe I can change, alter something. Maybe we can still put them through, let's call it a boring warm-up, but find little ways to make it engaging. And that looks different because there's so many players who want games and there's so many who don't. Like, where do you begin to tackle that kind of problem?
Yeah. To an extent, you tackle it a little bit with the head coach. Like, if the head coach kind of helps make that decision sometimes, whether the whole team does things, but and it's not been very often. But I'll back up and say, to some extent, they're right. Yeah, the barrier for, like, what a successful warm-up needs to be is actually really low. I mean, you just do, in order to have injury prevention, like, all you have to do is get tissue warm. And to that extent, fine. Go jog around, put on a sweatsuit, jog around back and forth, you know, do your whatever you want. There's a chance that does kind of prevent injury and kind of get them warm enough to play volleyball at a pretty high level. But to your point, what are we leaving on the table? Like, that's a great chunk of time where we could be getting better at something instead of just kind of getting us to our level. You know, if you play here, great. Your warm-up gets you here. There's a chance we could be doing stuff in warm-up, working on acceleration, working on the way you peel off the net, working on your crossover mechanics, that I am going to throw things at you that you might not have ever seen or done. Like, some days part of warm-up is resisted blocking, swing block, crossover, whatever it is. Some days it's assisted so that you're moving faster than you possibly could. Some days we're working on everybody getting their butt lower in defense, and I'm coming up with constraints and a fun game that would have everybody do that. To a little bit, to answer your question, if there are professional adult volleyball players, especially older veteran players that have a warm-up that they've used to go to war for years and years, and they feel confident in that, well, that could be a million placebo effects working. Fine. Part of being a good strength coach is parking your ego at the door. Me being like, that's the dumbest warm-up I've ever seen in my life, just standing on a BOSU ball for 10 minutes. But if it's in your head, if you think that it's helping you, then I'm going to let you go with it. I'm fine doing that. But you're going to be seeing what I produce with the rest of the team. Hopefully they see that, oh, it's not just all fun and games and giggles. Like, oh, after Rhett does the 30-second, you know, game of slap hand or what, I don't even know what it is, then we go and do handstands against the wall. Or maybe I work in the player that's off on the side's favorite weight room exercise, dropping the ball for their shoulder, whatever it is. And they see that I'm accomplishing a lot more than just getting blood, you know, getting body temperature up and tissues warm. Like, in fact, like, I'm kind of hitting a bunch of different stuff. Like, oh, you're not very fast. Well, then you can sit on the side and watch us do acceleration drills and, you know, timed relay races and this and that. And maybe they start opting in. And that's more often than not what I get, is that you get the athletes that opt into it, because it's not just the games. You know, the games are kind of the icing on the cake. Often, like the dancing in the warm-up that you saw, that is literally the last 90 seconds of a 12-minute warm-up. It gets all the publicity, but that is literally just the last 90 seconds where we're just doing neuromuscular activation stuff. That's my spin on the quick feet, rapid response, touch the line, come back. But, you know, meshed into that, the stuff you don't see is just a lot of microdose strength. It's a lot of the isometric stuff that my physical therapist loves. It's rehab. stuff that my therapist thinks will be good for the whole team. Like I'm layering in on it. Like it's movement stuff that I've been wanting to get. It's, you know, if I notice that my head coach has been yelling at them about their approaches being too fast, then I'm coming up with constraints that make them take slow approaches and warm up. And we'll do that. Makes the head coach want to buy me a beer afterward, but I'm also helping the team. So, you know, that player that was is resistant to do my fun warmups, they might have gotten yelled at the day before about not doing something well Well, maybe they see that exact same drill done in my warmups. I've just taken a strength and conditioning spin to it by putting a weight vest on them or making them do it with tennis ball in one hand, throwing it up and down, something like that. But they're going to see they're missing out on a chance to work on something volleyball specific that the rest of the team is doing.
So my question then is, why is what I'm seeing from you getting this, like, let's say media attention and like, oh, look what he's doing so different. Like, why is that the anomaly? Why are most coaches then continuing to do the same shit that doesn't engage and doesn't work? Like, what's the problem?
Laziness. Next question. Thank you.
Dude, I don't believe, I mean,
I don't know,
dude, I don't know either, but like, I like to think like, you know, we even, and I hate to put him on blast, dude, but I'm doing it. Like, I love our strength and conditioning guy. He's such a great person. I love him so much, dude. Like, he's such a good person, but it feels like he's bought into like, man, it's just, I know it's boring, but it's just got to be done. This is just how it's got to be done. We got to target all these things. And I've tried to like have conversation with him about like, there are other ways to do that are more fun and engaging, and flat out been like, look at this player right here. He like, it's been at the point, and we just luckily made some changes and talked as a team, but the last like couple months, it was at the point where half the team was just like not following what he was doing. And I'll be honest, I'll raise my hand. I was one of those guys where I was like, luckily when you're a little older, you can kind of get away with a lot more, but like, I'm the guy who instantly it's like, I do my thing and I like to change things up. Or if like he does a certain position, like I find a way to make that more engaging for me or try to explore in a different way. And what I've learned is, 99.9% of players don't think like I do in that sense. They're not thinking about creating their own warm up or playing with different things. Most players are just like, they don't want to have to think. And quite honestly, it's driven me crazy, dude. I wish I was just like a player who just could show up and whatever we do is just, I don't even question it. I fucking really, really wish I was wired that way, and I'm just not. I just find it so astonishing that there's just players who like, they're just so bored. They just do the same shit. And then when I talk to the strength and conditioning guy, it's just like, man, this is how it's got to be. And I just don't understand it. And that's been the message throughout my career, is the same warmups, the same drills. And I personally want to see change, you know, and I just don't know where, thank God for people like you, but like, I just don't understand, like, is it because they just read in the warmup scroll that was passed down in their classes they went to? And like, I just don't understand, man. And I don't want to come off like
there's
pessimist, but you know,
that's kind of the sneaky problem with the idea of best practices, because you could poll every strength coach in America and say, what do you think are your essential five things in a good volleyball warmup. And then you could just take the average of all those things. You could take the ranking list and you could create a warmup with that and think that that is the best warmup. Even if you ranked by the most successful coaches or whatever, you could create probably a very good warmup. The problem is that averages don't work. That when you try to create the perfect thing for a group of people, you end up creating something that doesn't fit anybody. There's this great book called The End of Average by Todd Rose, where he gives that example, like the US Navy or probably Air Force tried to create the perfect pilot cockpit by taking anthropometric measurements on 8,000 different airmen, like from like how much your ears stick out to like, of course, your limb lengths and stuff like that. And so they used the 8,000 averages to create the perfect cockpit, and it ended up fitting zero people. Like, you just simply can't do it. So they end up just creating the most adjustable cockpit. Well, that's what you need to be thinking for your athletes. Like, if you think that this one warmup is going to best deliver what 20 athletes need, that's a little bit of a fallacy. Now, I can completely understand where they're coming from, because I know Team USA strength coaches are hyper intelligent, really good at what they do. And And your program has had a ton of success. So there's a chance, you know, you can kind of look at the scoreboard. So that said,
I don't agree with that, but I'm with you.
I know. Okay. I have a lot of friends on your
I'm a part of the team, and I don't mean to rat on like a guy like Tim Pellett. I love though Aaron Brock. I love those dudes for sure. And I think I speak.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, continue.
Yeah, Tim love gave me this mug, by the way.
All ahead.
So, but yeah, and so when I'm thinking about creating a warm up, I'm thinking about throwing enough stuff at the athletes that to some extent I'm showing them kind of my over the course of a summer, showing them my full arsenal of things that I think I can do to make them better. And the best thing in the world is when a girl comes to me afterward and says, "Hey, Rhett," and this happened on the Dutch team where we, you know, I bring out different modalities every day. I want the girls to walk into warm up and be like, "Oh shit, they're hacky sacks on the floor. What the hell are we going to do with those? And over there, what is that? Is that a water balloon? Like, okay, how's this going to all work together?" Mm. Like, I want it to be that feeling of kind of like, what the fuck are we going to do today? And so like one day I had those little sandballs, right? I call them cannonballs, right? Those little rubber sandballs. And we just did a simple drop and catch and pull up exercise that I know you're familiar with. And Yvonne on the Dutch team said, "Rhett, never done that before, but for the first time in as long as I can remember, my shoulder doesn't hurt." After doing just 3 sets of 10, it's like, I don't know what that thing does for me, but that's my exercise. And so she carried a ball with her everywhere she went. I mean, did it on the side, like constantly, because that just, and so that's what I want. I want that I'm throwing enough stuff that girls are going to come up to me and say, "Hey, Rhett, we sprinted for like 30 meters. My legs felt great after we did that. I need to do that more often." Fantastic. This is all informing your off-season workout. It's all informing days when I say, "Hey, guess what? Everybody, instead of doing my lead workout, I want you to do your 3 favorite exercises for the next 5 minutes." And they get to figure out what helps them the most, mm-hmm. because it needs to be individualized. So I cycle in my warm-up between coach-led and boom, here are the 3 exercises I think could benefit you most as a setter. For the next 5 minutes, I'd like you to do those 3 exercises for warm up.
Really good stuff, dude. I again was like kind of going in different directions. The first thing I wanted to mention was, so it seems clear to me that when it comes to warm up, like variability is your friend. Introducing novelty and it's all good stuff, let's say. So when we mentioned like Team USA, the stuff that I get the most slack for, and Tim and I have gone back and forth, and like I love our relationship is so much stronger because I was such like
I would love to listen to some of those debates.
Dude, they're really good because I'm a curious cat, you know? And
and he's one of the smartest guys I know. He's such a great coach.
He is really great. And but the thing that I'm curious to hear about from you is you have quite a wide range of knowledge in terms of different philosophies, different practices. I myself was trained under a handful of different guys. The thing I get the most slack for in the USA gym is too much variability. And now I'm talking more about being consistent in the weight room. And I think my journey, the journey I'm still on right now, is trying to decide. So for me, it's like, I feel like I have this huge bag of tools, and I mean huge, like I was trained in so many different philosophies and like some DNS stuff, a guy I want to bring up later, I don't want to mention right now, different, like so many different ways of thinking, more of like a human first, athlete second. And so my question to you is, when you're deciding to make a program, let's say for the summer, like what is too much variability? What needs to be consistent? When do you change things? Let's start there. Let's start there. Yeah. I'm really curious. Okay.
When you added the during the summer, that really makes it rough, because if I'm not there to manage the variability, it makes me a little bit nervous. So if I'm sending people with an off-season program, like I'm kind of relying on them.
Dude, yeah. Let me just interrupt really quick. Like this is a whole nother topic that I was going to talk about at some point, which is like, if you're playing on the national team and you're playing overseas, there is no off season.
Yeah, right. So, of course.
So for me, it's like Dude, I look back on my years in Hawaii and I'm like, oh my God, 7 months of off season. Like the amount of thing. And that's why I became so inspired by movement. That's why I fell in love with it is like I made insane changes in my physique and how I felt about myself and like so many different things in like 7 months. And that was what got me going, you know, and just kept building on that. But when you don't have that luxury as a professional and then you play on the national team, it's kind of a nightmare. And so let's just continue just to keep things as simple as possible before my brain just absolutely explodes. For a guy like me, let's call it even this last 8 months. We play every Saturday. Deciding now, I think when injuries come up, it makes it a bit like, for example, I've had really bad plantar fasciitis. It's actually manageable for the first time in a while and doing really well. But I've had it for like a year and a half and it's just up and down. And so when it flares up or when certain things come up and you have certain injuries, it makes it easier to be like, we're going to target this tissue. We're going to target this tendon. Yeah. We're going to do long hold isometrics, like things that make sense to me. But let's just take a healthy 25-year-old professional volleyball player. He's got a season for 8 months. He plays every Saturday. How do you decide what structure to give him? Is he doing squats? Is he doing a, like we're really big, huge traditional, like maximum strength, right? So it's like maybe one day it's like slap 150 kilos or 120 kilos on the bar. We're going to do that once a week. And we've been doing it once a week. The team's been doing it once a week for 8 months or 7 months.
Yeah.
Like, where do you start to say shift some things and add some things and subtract some things?
All right. Let's talk X's and O's for a little bit.
Let's do it.
So for me in the weight room, there are some big rock exercises that I always kind of want to go to war with. And I'm always thinking about keeping the end in mind. So not necessarily a quad, but over a season with my team, like, hey, yeah, if it's Bulgarian or rear foot elevated split squats, whatever you want to call it, I have a goal. I want to get everybody on every girl on my team to be able to do 60 kilos for three reps, right? Say that is kind of in my mind. That's actually a really slow progression, even in a team that's never done that exercise with more than just kind of like 20, you know, like 10 kilo dumbbells in each hand. Sure. Like I want a bar on their back. I want them to get heavier than they have for a long time. But that said, it's not like I'm just going to keep putting 2.5 kilos on each side every week until we get there. Like for me, the most, like what I can do is in my progression from a 20 kilo to a 60 kilo involves stepwise progressions, but you know, maybe it's a 5x5 to start, but occasionally switching it up and doing a ladder up and down and then resuming with a 5x5 and then switching it and being like, okay, none of that. We're going to put aqua bags on our back and we're going to do plyometric jump and hold for a week, plyometric jump and stabilize for a week. Okay. Put more weights on, keep stepwise. Okay. Take that all off. Let's do assisted. So now I got a bungee cord attached to the top. We're going to be doing as fast and as high rapid response plyometrics as we can back onto the weights. Okay. This week you're going to partner up with a friend and we're going to see which team can have the highest total in this on a triple. Like,
wait, to be clear, when you say like aqua bag and then back to 5x5, do you mean aqua bag this week or this one time per week? And then next week,
it'd be like it would be for 5x5. Yeah, it would be for an entire, like, let's say, because I still am for that particular exercise, like, I still would be doing that exercise only one time a week. Let's say, you know, that's every Friday. We kind of, because Bulgarians are a big rock for me. So I'm never going to not do something like in that same movement pattern. Mm. But it's, you know, but it's my goal to keep that training both from getting monotonous for them, because I want them coming in sometimes and being like, oh shit, now he has push bands on the bar and we're just competing on who can move 50 kilos the fastest or 40 kilos the fastest. Like that's a whole new stimulus. Now, you know, he doesn't care about the weights today. Great. And now, oh, 2-3 weeks later, we do the same thing, but now we're teamed up because now I'm gamifying it by making them not want to let a teammate down. It's only 20 kilos, but we see what two people can have the fastest average time. But still, 80% of that training is going to be working toward that 60 kilo goal at the end of the season. Because in my experience, you know, when I was with the Chinese team, we had everybody at 60 kilos and we just causation correlation. We won a gold medal and didn't have any injuries And I just kind of want to, that blueprint so far has kind of worked for me. Mm-hmm. But it's my, as a coach, it's my, I need to make that training get to the end point, but also along the way have enough variety that we're giving this, we're giving different people the reason to celebrate in the weight room also, because the girls that can move the weight, the most weight, are not necessarily the ones that can move the lightweight fastest. Mm. And so I'm also kind of using that to inform myself on where everybody's weakness is. So if I've got a brute of a strong girl who could move 60 kilos probably in the first week, she might always lose a speed contest with, you know, a lightweight on her back. Well, that informs me that, hey, in her training, actually, I'm not going to get her to 60. I'm screw 60 kilos anymore. Her weight training stops being towards that entirely. And she just does speed stuff. So I'm always looking for, see, everybody's a puzzle and I'm trying to figure out where's their biggest weakness. What knob can I twist to be able to get the most total athleticism out of them?
So now I want to talk about me for a second. Okay. Because I'm like so curious and like secretly, yes, this is for everyone, but selfishly, this is, I really, you know, I'm trying to buckle down with you here. Like the thing that you mentioned right away was that you have a goal and the goal is let's do 60 kilos. And what I think about is the athlete who's like me, who is maybe in an environment that doesn't feel like it's inspiring them or breeding, I don't know, success and whatever that means to them. And yeah. So my question is like, what do you do for the, what would you recommend for a player like me who's doesn't like, I don't know how to word this, who's just like, this was all terrible. This was all mumbo. I'm going to take this back for a second. You said goals. And instantly I thought of, I haven't had a goal this year, like in the weight room. And this is another interesting thing because those look so different. Like when you're in college, fuck, dude, the amount of gains you make is insane. But as like
there's a leaderboard up on the wall, you want to get your name up there. Well,
No, that definitely. But I just mean your capacity of growth is so much.
And the steps are so big. Now it's just these tiny little. Right?
Well, now it's like, dude, what am I going to do? And this is interesting, like almost like a correlation of like, let's say my max squat is 180 kilos and I want to get to 3 reps or 5 reps of, I don't know, 170, let's say. Like, where do you find, like, is it worth it for someone like me to make an, let's even call it like an obscure goal? Because getting to 170 doesn't necessarily address all the things that have to do with not just performance, but the biggest one for an old guy now that I'm becoming an old guy is like injury prevention. Yeah. You know, like, where do you find the balance in that, you know?
Right. Well, a huge key to this, and I think a natural progression for an older strength coach is realizing for your sport, how strong is strong enough. And again, I kind of gave an example of 60 kilos. That's me also saying, treating my team like an average, which I just promised I would never do. So that's a very, like for some people, we don't like 60 kilos is 50 kilos. And for some people, 60 kilos is 70 kilos. But I use that as an example because almost every team I go into has never gotten that strong in the Bulgarian split squat. But if we just were to say squats, like for a female, for my women, like most of the girls know on my team, for almost all of you, once you can do 5 sets of about 100, 110 kilos, I'm going to stop ever making you try to squat more. That's strong enough to play volleyball for, in my book. The moment you can do that, I start working the whole other side of the spectrum. Now we start, you know, picking on your eccentrics, like, can you explosively absorb force? Maybe that's your problem. Maybe it's that you are no good at being able to move lighter weight fast. Maybe you're no good off of one leg. So like once you get to 110, I check that box that you're strong enough. Chasing 115 is only going to lead, not only going to lead, but could the propensity for injury that juice isn't worth the squeeze for me. Mm-hmm. And there's so many other ways to stimulate a squat pattern to make it brutally hard to, and potentially find the weakness of that athlete by attacking it in another way.
I mean,
By the way, I would never abandon strength. Like, we would still make them put that 110 on their back and show that to me every few weeks to make sure we haven't lost any strength. But in my experience, you don't lose it. You just get to explore the speed side of the equation and we get better benefits.
Well, and what's you bring up something that to me was really interesting. And this is, I guess, now where I would love to transition a little bit to talking about. Well, let me just say this. I'm really curious. Do you know a guy named Daniel Marchong?
Of course I do. Daniel and I worked together in China for 3 years.
That's why
we sat beside each other when China won the gold medal, for Christ's sake.
Dude, so Daniel is like the guy that I trained under. And I'm so happy you're familiar with his methods of doing things, because they're very different than your traditional, let's call it triphasic training or just heavy weights.
Very good free thinker. Yeah.
And I owe that guy my career. We still talk a little bit. Daniel's a very interesting guy. I have truly so much love for him and also hate him, because he fucked me up for life. Because what it showed me is, dude, I'll never forget. And granted, I was in college, so I'm trying to see where that applies nowadays. But he's big on the split squat, and he does it very specifically. And I don't think I ever lifted or did a split squat that was more than 90 or 100 kilos.
Yeah.
And he's really into the like isometric holds, adding in some oscillation stuff,
perturbations,
all of that, oscillations. You know? And what blew my mind. And so when I was in college, I was definitely overtraining, which is a whole nother conversation we don't need to get into right this second. But I was 6:30, 3 days a week, 6:30 a.m. We trained as a team in Hawaii for like an hour, just very traditional, some cleans, some squats, that kind of stuff. I went directly from there to train with Daniel for about two and a half hours. And went through all of it, all the different stuff we did. And it was more like long hold isometrics, higher rep schemes, like never like a 5x5 squat, never.
Right.
And
right.
What totally fucked me up for life is that the next summer I worked with him exclusively doing his stuff. And then when we came back as a team in that fall of my sophomore, junior year, my, PRs for, let's say, a bench press. And we did like depth pushups, like barely using weight. And we did like some bench press stuff, but it was like incline. And it was, again, those isometrics and oscillation stuff. And my numbers for my PRs for my bench press were at numbers I never could have dreamed of, like never. What ruined me is that I was like, oh, there's so many different ways to skin a cat. Like, there's so many different ways to get stronger and jump higher without just needing to stack on tons of weight. Right. And I'm not saying there's not a place for that. Right. It just, as a kid especially, it blew my mind. And to this day, it's been like, whoa, dude, it's made it so difficult for me to decide like which route to go. Because on one hand, I've seen so much success in my career with staying away from heavy stuff and doing more long hold isometric stuff, more oscillation, more explosive plyometric work. And then I've also seen, I'm not the biggest fan of it, I'm trying to be more of, but like, I've seen results from just doing traditional style strength and conditioning, but not to the point where I was working with Daniel, where it was like something that just felt like, I'm gonna say it felt magical. And so I had a feeling that you were at least familiar with like his method of doing things. And
I've stolen so much from Daniel. So like so much of what I saw in Daniel informed what I push into my warm-up stuff. So whereas, like I said, like the long hold isometric perturbation, sometimes that doesn't flow very well in my weight room. It just can kind of be a speed bump into the actual flow of the dynamic of people getting around and I need people moving. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it does, but all of that stuff that, speaking of rear foot elevated split squats, we would do rear foot elevated isometric holds with Daniel's kind of exact way of doing it, opposite hand up, and all that's I've carried over into the next two teams after I left the Chinese team, because you're right, there's just so many great benefits from such a simple exercise done with kind of very exacting detail on how it gets performed.
Well,
and so for me, like, and so to kind of take a step back, I am a believer in that, and there's a lot of research that has borne out a traditional weight training. And I say 5x5, but no one does 5x5 throughout a season. Like sure. At the end of the season, it's different sets and rep schemes. You wouldn't want to be doing 5x5 as you get closer to Olympics, sure. World Championships, right. Whatever. But that was a simplistic. So for a couple of big rock exercises, they may look like that. But generally speaking, I've seen so many benefits, like magical benefits from not only what Daniel does, but from other therapists and other like dynamic neuromuscular stimulation or stability exercises. All of that I get to play with in warmups. Mm. And so it's like, even though I might not go all in on it on a 3 days per week kind of thing, I'll at least do it 1 or 2 days a week in warmups to kind of hedge my bets and tick that box. Mm. And so that, you know, a knees over toe guy kind of thing, that's mm-hmm. where I'd experiment with that. I can't go all in on this in my weight room, but I certainly will experiment with more sissy squats and tibialis raises and things like anterior raises, things like that in my warm up, because that's just my perfect time to just do extra micro dosing of strength. And mm-hmm. if I start seeing benefits for it, maybe I move it over into the weight room. Mm. Or maybe I just make sure we're doing it 3 times a week in warm ups. So,
well, kind of, man, I guess, dude, that for me has been the, and I'm sure most athletes don't even deal with this problem at all, but for me, it's been the trickiest thing to navigate is, you know, you go into the national team and they have their way. Tim has his way of doing things. Yep. I go overseas. I set the marker really early when I come overseas that like, I'm the guy who's going to do my thing. But I think
in your contract.
Yeah, basically, dude, because I think also weight trainers, strength and conditioning guys see right away that I'm curious and I have a lot of knowledge in different things. And so it's not just like, hey, I'm going to do what I want. You know, it's a lot of conversation and trying to understand where can we find some middle ground and trying to learn, because I believe even if they're just like a standard strength and conditioning guy, I always think there's something to learn from someone. It's been my biggest challenge is navigating. Like I'm going to start playing around more with like screwing around with my warmups and doing, and I have, but it's been the biggest struggle for me because like his, for example, really basic, 10, let's call it that split lunge, 10 second isometric, 3 reps, 10 second isometric, 3 reps,
oh, yeah.
10 second isometric, 3 reps. That's one set, go to the other leg. Dude, that was always hard. I worked with him for 3-4 years straight. That was never easy. And what I loved so much about his method of training was like, it was challenging me every single time. I can go into a weight room right now and slap kilos on and squat and RDL and it feels good. And it's hard for maybe like a quarter second, you know, but it's like that shit I've been doing forever. Every single time we work together, even those like dropping the ball, that kind of stuff, it's so intentional and you're learning so much about your body and like this mind muscle connection. And there's so many different things that involve being, let's say, an elite level volleyball player.
And also a sneaky speed component, right? Mm. So that's the nice thing about like a lot of what Daniel does is like for that ball drop, which absolutely I stole from him. So I'm glad we give him credit for that, but it's not, the intention is exactly right. If somebody's just listening to that podcast and they think, okay, bend over your hips, get your torso at 90 degrees, drop the ball a couple inches, grab it and pull it up. You need to be pulling it up like, you know, as fast as humanly possible. And if you're not doing that, you're not getting much of the benefit out of this exercise, but it's also like, so much of those perturbations are to be building kind of dynamic speed or speed and kind of while keeping the rest of your body super stable.
Yeah. And he was big with that move with like making sure your scap was just like fully secured the whole time. You couldn't break anything. His stuff was like really technical in that way. And it's very interesting because when you talk more about, now I kind of want to get under the umbrella, which by the way, if you got to go at any point, just like give me a signal or something. I feel like I could talk forever. I don't want to. Okay, cool.
Just keep it going.
Because I think, you know, I'm someone who was also really inspired by a guy like Bruce Lee, who wasn't inspired by Bruce Lee. A guy like Ido Portal is another guy who these people who were just,
I'm so glad. So if you had asked me who I would recommend to you, I would be like, I hope you've heard of Ido Portal because Ido is so right up your alley.
Yeah. And, I've been listening and watching his stuff for a while now. And, I just love his curiosity for movement and I love his idea. You know, most I hate to, I'm not trying to burn strength and conditioning guys, by the way. I don't want to seem like I have this beef with them, because I don't. The fuck do I know? I don't have any degrees or anything. You know, I'm just like I got street knowledge, you know? But the reason I like, the first reason to love Ido Portal is just philosophy. And it's the same with Bruce Lee. I liked Daniel for the same thing. It's just like the way they think.
Free thinkers. Yeah,
totally. And I really connect with that, you know? But this idea that it seems to be for most like strength and conditioning stuff about doing things biomechanically efficiently in the weight room, because volleyball is the chaos, right? And I'm curious from you where you find the balance between so Ido is more of like moving without thinking, self-organizing, playing these games, doing these things and letting your body kind of work for you.
Right.
And not necessarily being like, okay, when we squat, we're going to make sure we're pushing our knees out and we're twisting in our feet and tripod. And because that's not realistic. So my question to you is, where do you find the balance? Is there something to biomechanics and applying that to the weight room? And like, where is the line there?
Yeah. I mean, God, this is going to be on my tombstone, but maybe I'm hedging my bets here, but that's where I hit all of it. I've gone to 2 Ido Portal seminars. I went to one in Belgium, and then I saw him again when he came to Shanghai 1 year. And I could listen to him all day, because he is that pre-thinker. And he's the one that got me thinking, because if you go to any seminar in the United States of strength coaches, they're going to talk about the importance of having proper posture, having, you know, a neutral spine, knees in alignment, all of that. And Ido will be like, oh my God, you're just preparing people to get hurt the first time they have to load groceries into the back of their trunk, you know, because their back is going to round and you've never made them stronger that way. Like, look at anything. Like, look at, like, you're trying constantly to get rid of asymmetries. Ido Portal will, a quote of Ido Portal is, I have never seen 2 symmetrical breasts in my life. They'll just say like, yeah, you're like the heart's on the other side of the body. You're not meant to do everything in symmetry. Mm-hmm. So just make sure that you have a functional body that does what you need it to do, that can explore all the spaces that you need to. It can make every shape a volleyball player makes, which unfortunately includes having knees that are super valgus, like cave in sometimes. Mm-hmm. So instead of just constantly living in fear or being in that position, get it stronger.
So how do you do that?
You could, like any other squat, start with you would want to go with very little weight, like anything. If you just progress it, I mean, he will say, what's the difference? You know, the difference between medicine and poison is just dosage. So if you're, and so squatting, just going down and touching your knees together and coming back up, valgus squat, knees up. Also, by the way, done barefoot is also working on getting out of alignment strength at the ankle. Mm. And so you just progressively load it, you know, holding this, like every time you're warming up, do a couple sets of valgus squats so that when you get into a valgus position on the volleyball court, you don't immediately just blow your knee out, tear your MCL, because it's the first time you've ever been in that position in a, you know, maybe you land in it. So it's loaded. And so, you know, maybe you load that. Same thing with rolling on the outside, you know, taking your shoes off and getting on the outside of your ankles. And that's an Ido Portal, like I can't remember what walk he calls that. But yeah, we spend a ton of time in what we call out of alignment strength. And that's a big thing that I stole from Ido, which I think that a lot of strength coaches are scared of. Rounded back strength, same thing. You know, coaches live in fear of a rounded spine. Same thing that he lived in fear of your knee going over your toe. Whereas these are all just positions that the body gets into a lot and you kind of need to prepare the body for, and maybe staying away from these positions could be actually a cause, or, you know, that when you get into them with load and you haven't prepared them for load, you're in trouble.
Sorry. My brother's tried to call me. Dude, you're totally spot on.
Shit, he's calling me too.
I mean, I feel like we just became best friends, even brothers potentially after this podcast. So I wouldn't be surprised if he starts calling you. You're totally spot on. And the knees over toes was a great example of like, oh, if you watch volleyball, watch people. I watched myself. I analyze myself and how I move sometimes just for fun. And I like to see how other middles are moving. What are people moving? Yep. And like how many times you land from a serve, land with your left foot, your right foot kind of drags and your knee is way over your toe. And right. So it's like, maybe there's something there. Maybe there's something to having strength in those weak range of motions that would make sense, right? And I think another thing that came to mind when you were talking was I worked with this is maybe for people to start to figure out how to start playing and experimenting. I work with another guy, Austin Einhorn, who I love dearly, another free thinking guy. And
yeah, I listened to your podcast with him. He's great.
Oh, nice. Yeah, dude, he's really, really awesome. And you know, we started experimenting with let's say you're warming up to max RDL or max squat's a great example. Warming up to max squat. Yeah. So maybe in the first one, two, maybe three, I don't know how long you're warming up for, rounds when you're doing lighter weight, I was playing with different foot positions as a warm-up instead of just like
perfect example.
Having 20, 60 kilos on my back and just doing this like perfect elevator squat, he calls it. You know, and experimenting with like having one foot out and messing around, going valgus, like doing, playing around a little bit.
Load up one side of the weight with a little bit more weight than the other side.
Great example. Yeah. And so I love all of that experimentation. And just again, like this is just for my brain to eventually, I can't wait till I can solve this problem. Where I get stuck sometimes is there's so much to begin to play with.
Yeah.
There's like, you're talking about all these different ways of warming up, whatever. It feels like to me endless. Like I don't feel like I have enough time in the day to do all the things that I want to do. Like fuck what the damage they're doing to my body in a good or a bad way. Like I'm the guy who overtrains because I love it, dude. I just love it.
Yeah.
And so what,
And
so what I think about is, what actually helped me a lot is getting rid of, I'll never forget, Austin kind of got me started on it and Ido as well. I got rid of my first year overseas, I got rid of my couch and my furniture and just threw a rug down. And dude,
my sister did the same thing.
Dude, that is a sneaky way to get some extra range of motion, to get some extra movement in, because you're forced to. You're in a position on the ground after like 5-10 minutes for sure, you're moving around because it's just not as comfortable as like laying sitting in a chair right now, you know?
Right.
And I think those are some sneaky ways to implement it, but I can imagine, especially in like the Instagram age we're in now, that I get so many kids who send me DMs like, where do I start? Where do I begin? How would you answer that question?
Yeah. Well, I don't want to be a broken record, but stop doing jumping jacks and running around the gym to warm up. Like do 20 valgus squats, do 10 sissy squats, do your perturbations and your out of alignment strength. Like do all of that, all the stuff that you've been looking to kind of experiment with, like that, or all the things that don't qualify as my big rocks, but are stuff that I still suspect are vitally important for athletes. That's the way you get your tissues warm from now on. Mm. Right. So if you have horrible ankle mobility, you should be doing you should be doing tibialis interior stretches to try to, and while you do other stuff with your upper body and creative ways to get your body, body temperature up, while also not wasting your effing time with the 20th set of jump rope jumping jacks you've done, that week. Mm. So that's where my head is. Like it's all about efficiency, and I would rather be experimenting experimenting with some of these some of these different ways to train and seeing what works, even what works for specific athletes, than just mindlessly going through another set of karaoke and shuffle and skips.
And I kind of want to dive into something that I think that volleyball is the most traumatic non-contact sport on the planet, indoor volleyball. What do you think when I
about
say
that?
You know more sports than me, probably. I'm not good. But I just think, like, I've always thought, like, we did not evolve to jump as much as volleyball players are jumping every day. Right. And we have verts. We luckily just got verts here. And that's another interesting toy to play around with. But I'm averaging probably somewhere around 100 to 120 jumps a practice. In the game, it's around the same, depending on if it goes 3, 4, or 5 sets. So that's 6 days a week, let's call it 700 jumps. That's insane for year round No real off season. And then what are strength and conditioning? Like, how are we supplementing like weight room stuff? It's all geared towards being better at volleyball. And where I love guys like Ido, guys like Austin, who as well, who are really into the like hanging and doing things that we evolved to do, is not to forget that we're also humans, you know, we're playing a sport that to me is not only do I make the argument with no research, like what the fuck do I know? I just think that because I play it, but I think it's the most like poisonous sport to play. And I think what I'm really curious about, and this is the quest of many different people that I know, is like, are non-contact injuries avoidable in our sport?
First of all, can I do another Ido Portal impression?
Because your last accent was pretty good. So keep the accent going.
You mentioned, I got to mastered my Israeli accent. So you mentioned hanging. And of course, Ido is somebody that says that he can get people to do a one arm pull up just through hanging, you know, in that step, depressed, in that exacting way. Anyway, we were doing a hanging challenge, like a 2-minute hanging challenge. And so just everybody's hanging and he goes over to the guy next to me and I watch the guy drop. And Ido walks up to him and says, "You could not bring a butterfly to orgasm with that grip." I don't even know what that means, but it was funny.
Wait, like, so you trained with him? Did you go to Israel?
Yeah, no, I went to Belgium to go see him.
Okay, cool.
I took a trip. I was over in the Netherlands, and I went to Belgium for a weekend to do his weekend certification. And then I did another one when I was in Shanghai.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, I am always checking his schedule. I go out of my way to find him.
Yeah. What do you like so much about the stuff he preaches, or where do you find it most beneficial for what you're doing?
First of all, comments like that. Second of all, just the out of the box thinking that it always stimulates, like my brain goes haywire. I've stolen so much stuff. I mean, you see, we'll do the Zen Archer stuff that he does. Mm-hmm. Like talk about like just forcing you to make shapes in a really novel and unique ways. I always think about that kind of thing. We do it, I come back from the seminars. I took pull-ups out of my girls' training in favor of different variations on just strong hanging.
Love that.
And so we do different things that way, but he always inspires me. There's just a few people that are saying things that are so different than what we're getting in America that I'm not going to accept all of it, but a lot of it makes a ton of sense to me just intuitively. So I gravitate towards, like you, I think I gravitate towards unconventional thinkers. Mm. Okay. But your other question was...
My other question was more or less, and this is, how could you possibly give a definitive answer here? But it was more or less like, do you think that non-contact injuries are avoidable in our sport? Avoidable.
Oh man, this is going to get me in hot water. No, I think I can honestly say, I don't think it's unavoidable just because I think it's almost impossible to train for every iteration of the way that the body might land move and have to adjust. And I think you can come at training with the most variable approach. Like you said, do your first, like when you're doing box jumps, every time you step off, land a different way, turn your head this way, land with your feet that way. Like you can try to come up with every iteration, but the fact is there are too many joints in our body and there's too much variety in the way that, and you're relying on, stimulus that other people are giving you that you couldn't possibly predict. So,
and also to me, it's like, what's enough stimulus to cause an adaptation, right? Like if you're doing landing from a box jump and you land five box jumps you got to do, or let's say 20, and each one you land kind of a different way. And then maybe that's the only time you do that other than your sport. It's like, is that enough to add to the robustness? Like where's the line of like it's enough it's clear when it comes to like let's say gaining strength in your bench press or something, right? But like where is that in terms of all this variability?
Really, really tough to study. That's why no one really knows, or we'd all be doing it the same. I mean, like I said, this is why my warmups spend all their time trying to tick all those boxes so that I don't kind of keep myself up at night worrying that I'm not doing enough to get enough variability in the landings or different ways that we hit a volleyball. Because, if we go back to Daniel, like doing the perturbations with the band, like you've got to do those with the band coming out this way, back behind you this way, 45 degree angle. We've got to hit it from over here. We got to hit it from over here. There's no time to do all that. So I have to. And so to answer an earlier question, your head feels like it's exploding with this much information. Mine does too, but I mitigate that a little bit by having a gnarly Excel spreadsheet that every Sunday I am filling out for the week, where I am like, I can relax because I know that I'm getting some knees over toe stuff on Tuesday and Friday. I know I'm getting a little bit of the Daniel shoulder stuff on Monday and Thursday. And I know that I'm going to get, and I add that all in, and then I can look at back of the week and be like, okay, all right. I think I've gotten a complete enough there that I'm, that, oh, and by the way, it's not like we're just doing, a shoulder perturbation, an isometric shoulder perturbation on one day a week. Like another day a week, we might be throwing a light medicine ball against the wall in that same position. Another day of the week, we're doing the drops. Another day of the week, we're doing a Turkish getup, all of which is reinforcing the exact same thing in a bunch of different ways. But I need to, I hate the thought of just like going into practice every day and be like, what should we do today? Let's do handstands. And then maybe we'll do push-ups and I take as much time in my warm-up as I do planning my strength, because I want to put it all in there to make sure it makes sense. Am I getting enough of the shoulder stuff I want to do? Am I getting enough leg isometrics in different angles? Am I getting enough crazy landing stuff? Am I getting enough speed work? Am I getting crossover mechanics done? Have I taken care of this? That's how I keep my brain from exploding, is that every week I map it out.
Well, maybe after this podcast or maybe another day, I would love to like not just see what your Excel sheet looks like, but like how to get that out. Because that is that's been my issue, is that I have so many ideas in my head and I haven't even I'm not saying I want to move into being a strength and conditioning trainer, let's say, but God, I want to be involved in movement in some way that I know. And so to me, it's like that's actually been my problem. That's how I show up to the gym sometimes. It's like, I don't have to think about it anymore. It's just like, this is how I feel. I want to do this. And I got 1,000 different things I'll pull out of a hat. But I think learning to be organized would probably be a lot easier for my conscience, because that is where I was like, hey, these players who don't think about anything, God, that's so nice. You just free up your mind. And someone like you comes along and is just like, do this. It's like, okay, I just do this. And that's all you have to focus on. And I feel like I'm constantly just like, okay, let's pull some of this. I want to do some of this. I want to do some of this. So I'll sit on the floor so I can do some of this. And while I'm watching TV. And that's been big for me. Sitting on the ground was really big for me.
Yeah.
Anyways,
Here's the sneaky thing that strength coaches don't
want. You're becoming like my therapist now, so thank you.
Athletes do.
This is an unpaid podcast too, just by the way.
I am so underqualified for that. This is no picnic up here.
Actually, doesn't sound like it. Sure.
The sneaky thing that no strength coach wants you to know is that pretty much every single kind of strength and conditioning will work for at least a little bit, right? For 6 months. Dan John said this. He's like, I don't know, when I was training Jake and Rosie or Ed and Rhino, we would get beaten by a team and be like, oh shit, we just lost to Anthony Medell. He just does Pilates. Is Pilates the best way to go? No, it all works. Mm. It all works. At least for a certain amount of time. The key is that, because your body will adapt and it will make great changes while it adapts. And then it's going to plateau and you need to then vary your stimulus for most people. And so if the exact same training worked every single year, then gold medalists would repeat more often than they do, right? Because your trainer would just copy and paste their entire strength file to the next year and you just follow that exactly. But it never works for the same person the same way. And so you keep your big rocks, the things that you need to go to war with. And then after that, you are trying to vary the stimulus in a way that continually excites the athletes, gets them excited about training. Because honestly, a lot of it is effort, right? So if you are going just gusto for whatever is new, like if you get, because that's part of what stimulates you. You love something new and novel and you will give it your all. Like if you get a new strength coach and he's like, hey, I got these awesome hydro bags that you wear on your vet. And I have this full line of stuff that we're going to start incorporating into strength and conditioning. I can tell you're going to be one of the guys that's trying to set records with that thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it's all velocity-based training and stuff, you're going to try to do that because it's new and novel. But you need to be cycling in that novelty enough that it's always a situation in the weight room where the athletes are almost tricked into giving you more effort than they want. I mean, this is now I'm talking to you like you're a strength coach, but
which you shouldn't be, but thank you.
I measure so much. I mean, that's why I use a lot of velocity-based training devices. This is why, you know, for my K boxes that I use for eccentric overload, I always have them measuring how much they're doing because I want them all competing against each other. Mm. Or I want them competing against their score from last week, which is on the page in front of them as is their best score of all time. Like I want to make sure that like I use those things to just trick them into working harder. If I think I'm plateauing in an exercise with the girls, then I pair them up and I make them compete as partners. Pair them up in teams of three, make them compete that way. I make them write up their scores on a whiteboard so that they're always seeing everybody else's. I would hate to have everybody have individual sheets where you don't get to compare yourself to every other middle on the team.
And I think that should be done a lot more often because when you talk about using devices that track your rate of force and velocity and those things, to me, they seem to be like the thing that strength and conditioning coaches keep to then either show you or just show the coach like, hey, look, when we started here, they were there and now look at them here. And I just think that doesn't cover enough things. I think using it, I think it is a great tool. And I have, as someone who originally, I've gone through so many different phases, let's say, and one of them was like, I'm not tracking shit. Like I've done these things so long, they're just a part of me. And so I let go of a lot of that. And I realized now as I've gotten older, like it's actually important for me to track things for my personal self. Because also, it can't just be, I've been doing these things forever, so I'll just keep doing them this way. And like, it's not, you lose being intentional about what you're trying to do. And I think what you brought up, the fact that you're using them to like get the girls to compete in the moment, you know, or to have, keep the scores up for the week. Like that is good stuff, dude.
Yeah. It's also a way I manufacture celebration. Like I want, you know, if my head coach walks into the weight room, I want them to see a little cluster of girls in the corner screaming their heads off because they just hit a high score or just bested something, you know, hit a PB in something else,
or they
just beat the girls next to them. Yeah, right. And so like, I'm always, you know, if my weight training that day doesn't have a single reason that I think people are going to be cheering, like I need to change the variables. I need to make sure that, like, if I don't think everybody's going to hit a new best speed on a certain weight, then I need to change the game that day and to make it a brand new contest that they've never competed in before. That is super similar to what I would have done normally, but now is a way that they are competing, or at least competing against what they've done previously. And I'm making a big deal about how much they lifted or more often than not, how much speed there, or how much speed they had lifting that exact same weight 3 weeks ago. And so like I need them walking in and being like, all right, what's the thing today?
You know what? The world needs more like you. I just want to say that. I'm fucking serious, dude. Like,
I'm throwing away my CV today. I'm just going to send this podcast out to every prospective coach. You're making me feel great about how I do my job.
I'm going to put this one on blast, dude. We went through so many good things and you're just like really a breath of fresh air. It's been really great to get to know you a little better here. And
it's been fun. Yeah.
I think the thing that I love the most from all the things you've said about the direction you seem to go, a bit of your philosophy, is that what you're doing is you're getting people engaged. And as someone who's been playing and as someone who's done hitting lines thousands of times, as someone who's played just basic 6-on-6 thousands of times, as someone who's done the same touch your toes, reach for the sky 1,000 times, what you realize, and this is for everything in life, like you need to be curious. That childlike curiosity carries you through so much. And where you see players just start to like just talking, or they're just not having fun, or they're just seem bored, or that is also a sign to me of like also in their life. And I think the world needs more people like you to engage, to teach these kids, not just, hey, just do this so you can get stronger. It's like, I'm going to teach you about your body, but actually you're going to end up teaching yourself about your body through the environment that you put them in. And that to me is just like the chef's kiss, baby. That's just so beautiful. And I just think it's so great. And I've learned so much in the last couple hours.
Yeah, it's funny. So this is the way my brain works. You mentioned like a million hitting lines. And then I'm thinking about how we're talking about all the different landing positions you need to be in. And I was just thinking, why in hitting lines don't we have like a really light super band around and the person behind you is holding it from a different position every time so that you're just feeling the littlest tug into a weird position every time you have to land to prepare. I was like, you could still get all the benefits from hitting while also getting a little bit of stimulus to pull you in different directions to make you a little bit more robust. Like that's the kind of thing that I go to my head coach with to be like, hey, one time when we're doing hitting lines, can we do the first few with just a little red band, just pulling them into a little bit of different spaces every time? Mm. Anyway, we could go on.
Not anyway, dude, we could go on forever. And straight up, dude, I really hope that this just ignited a friendship. I honestly like feel like I could pick your brain so much more. I don't even want to wait until I'm done playing volleyball. I would love to at some point. This is probably some off podcast talk, but like I would love to keep building a relationship with you and understanding a bit more of your philosophy and coming up with ideas because, you know, I haven't, if someone paid me right now to be in your position, like this is why maybe I'll end up going down that path. Cause I just would love to really put time into like, what ideas can I come up with? Like sky's the limit. What could I come up with? Like the idea you just brought up is like, that's an amazing idea. It doesn't really potentially inhibit their ability to go and do hitting lines, which granted, I think hitting lines is a bit of a waste of time. But we don't need to get too deep into volleyball stuff like that. I think we've covered already so much. Yeah. My last real thought for you is like just trying to better understand you. Like what are you working on? What do you work on? What gets you curious? You know, like you bring curiosity into so many people's lives every day and you bring them this fulfillment and joy. And I'm assuming you're going to be the good parent here and say, you get the joy from seeing them succeed. And yes, that may be the case, but like, what gets you going? I mean, what are you into, you know?
You know,
got like a current project you're working on or like, I don't know.
No. And I'm all over the place and I enjoy like so many great coaches, like I enjoy reading books that are kind of outside and seeing how it fits. Like I mentioned, The End of Average. I just read a book
give me some books really quick. I was curious, like where are some good starting places for people who want to dive a little deeper?
Oh my God. All right. So The Power of Moments by the Heath brothers. So Chip and Dan Heath wrote a book all about how if you want to make change in someone, you need to manufacture remarkable moments that actually leave an impact on someone's life that otherwise it's just this warm wash, this warm bath of information. You need to manufacture moments. And it's just the examples they give, like my brain was off to the races about, all right, how can I actually get some of my athletes to not eat, make bad choices food wise, right? Or something like that. Like how can I, it's not another PowerPoint lecture on carbohydrates and macronutrients. How can I do it? Mm. And so, I don't know. And so that's one, The Power of Moments. I won't go down that rabbit hole, but, and there's, there's so many good, like I said, The End of Average is awesome. Books that everybody has read, like Range, like the whole Malcolm Gladwell series, David Epstein, of course, is this just fantastic writer that writes about like nature versus nurture in sport.
When it comes to like ideas for like the idea you just brought up, do you get inspired by, do you seek out certain people? Has it been this like coincidence of life where it's brought you people like Daniel or like Ido Portal or like, you know, where you're just mixing and matching, or do you seek some of that out?
So much of it is because I've just decided not to work in the United States for the last decade. Mm-hmm. You know, that honestly just, you know, you would think, so if you just live in the US, you would think that the only movement screen that a physical therapist should ever do is the FMS, is the functional movement screen it's just ubiquitous in every weight room in the United States. Whereas you step outside these borders, almost no one is doing the functional movement screen. Well, that's one example. Like they all have movement screens that involve exercises that you like are screens that are just like, that makes complete sense to me. I need to do more of that. Same thing with the strength and conditioning, you know, best practices that that most of us do here. It's only when I worked in a Chinese from France and from Italy and from Australia. This is
I just lost like 10 seconds of you because my Polish internet is like, you've been talking way too long. I did see that book. Can you, what's the title of that book again?
It's called How We Learn to Move by Rob Gray. Rob Gray has a podcast, Perception and Action podcast, all about what we're talking about, which is that repetition is like rote repetition and one way of doing things is the enemy of true great elite performance.
That book actually I've had recommended to me by a few different people that I admire. And actually I might buy a Kindle. I think I got to buy a Kindle, dude. My problem is I'm so bad at like Amazon. I always forget my password and like I'm not the person getting packages delivered. I need a Kindle so I can start crushing books, dude.
Hey, me neither. I'm full Kindle. This book is not available on Kindle, which is why I can hold it up to you.
Of course it's not. I got to find a way then.
That's a miss. I know. Hey, because I travel like you. I can't be carrying a book around. That's ridiculous.
I do like the pages though, you know? Pages are definitely, there's no argument there. Yeah, sure.
Of course I do. But but this one actually in retrospect, happy, like this is one that I would keep on a bookshelf because it's filled with, you know, like the part I was just reading, they were talking about how, we all say, it's just like riding a bike. Well, do you realize that you learned to ride a bike when you were this tall and now you're like 6'9" or whatever you are, your body has changed dramatically. You still can ride the bike, but that's because with all the variability in your body shape and size, you've never forgotten to ride a bike. Well, that's because your body is self-organized and you've learned how to adapt to all the different perturbations, all the differences in the variability of your body size and strength. And it hasn't messed you up because
your body loves
variability.
Totally. Ito uses the same type of example when he talks about like when you're a kid and you're like learning how to walk. It's like you didn't learn it from just watching your parents. Like you learn it on your own. Instinctually, your body figures it out. And I guess I believe that that journey potentially never ends, you know?
Right. I mean, shit, we measure your readiness by measuring your heart rate variability, right? So the human body works best when it's variable. Heart rate variability is counterintuitive because the more variable your heart rate is, more healthy you are, right? Constant, less variability is actually bad. Well, that should also inform the way that you train. I mean, there's so many interesting examples in this book. You're going to love it.
I'm going to love it, dude. Well, hey, I feel like I've said it like 5 times during this podcast, but fuck, it was really nice to meet you. And this was just amazing. I think there's so much gold in this podcast. I generally selfishly feel like I have a little more of a clear mind in taking this. I have all these tools. I don't know what to do with it and being like, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe I can use these tools and finding ways to add them in instead of showing up in the weight room time and being like, I want to do literally 1,000 things right now.
1,000 things.
You know? So that was super helpful for me selfishly. I got a lot from this. This was awesome.
Great. Great. Yeah. Well, I'm glad I didn't disappoint.
No, dude. Ryan Seacrest's twin doppelganger does not disappoint. Huge surprise.
Thank you. And if he's listening, you know, get at me. Come on, Ryan. Let's talk about this.
And by the way, where could he get at you? I know you're not like super big on social media. You should be. Mm-hmm. I'm new to the social media game. Let's say in the last like year or so, I've been I know it looks like it because I've been consistent. You know, your boy's been consistent. He's crushing it for sure.
It's impressive.
But it's hard. But even my ego is just like trying to show one movement that I know will grab people's attention. Right? If I put the title like "Jump Higher," you know, it's like hits, and it's just like if only I could tell them like, hey, just continue to get older and continue to do these things, and like you're gonna jump higher regardless. You know, like it's so more than that. And then you get older, you want to have an actual lengthy career. It's not about jump higher anymore. Yeah. It's about stay healthy. Like things just change, you know. But where could people get in contact with you? I don't know, Instagram.
I'm trying to build. Over the last like month, I've made a concerted effort to be posting a couple days a week on Instagram. So you can follow me there. So Instagram is just Retasaurus, RETTASAURUS.
Retasaurus, dude. I love that. Was that?
I also spell it just like I do my name.
So good. What made you come up with Retasaurus?
Oh, man. It was back like this is the in the early days of Twitter, I think I chose it because my nephew was calling me that at the time. And I thought, this probably won't stick around for long. It doesn't really matter.
Dude, I
threw it in there.
I'd love to know your like original AOL profile names.
Yeah, exactly. And now I just can't get around it. So
I love it. Well, hey, man, this was great. People are going to love it. Cool. I'm stoked. Really good to meet you. And I hope we can grow this relationship, man. Really, this has been
awesome. Absolutely. I'm here for it.
Word. All right. Peace. Well, you're up here now.